Podcasting from a secret location under the mats. This is the Lessons from the Dojang Podcast, a podcast that literally has nothing to do with martial arts, but instead, we discuss the biggest news stories of the week. Kind of makes you wonder how we came up with the name, doesn't it? Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and attorney Frank Natal.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your midweek lesson, Lessons from the Dojang, the audio edition. I am, of course, one of your hosts, Master Patsy Zarilla, and with me, as always, my friend and your other co-host, attorney Frank Natal. How you doing today, Frank?
I'm wonderful, Master Patsy. I know both of us are enjoying today as one of the semifinals of the UEFA Championship League is ongoing, so I'm just having a blast today.
Yeah, just to fill everybody in, at halftime, Barcelona is beating Liverpool 1-0, 1-0. It's in Barcelona. It is at halftime on a Luis Suarez goal. What's significant about that is the fact that Suarez used to play for Liverpool at one time. Both him and Philippe Coutinho, who both play for Barcelona now, are playing against their old side. And, you know, even in American sports, right, whenever you got somebody who plays against their old side, it's a little bit special, I think.
Yeah, and the fact that Liverpool is playing away today, it's important for Barcelona to kind of keep them off the board. You don't want to give them an away goal in the second half. So a 1-0 result, if they can hold on to that, is probably, in my opinion, sufficient, you know, to feel comfortable going on. But I'd love to see a 2-0 result. But just the main thing is to keep Liverpool off the board.
Yeah, to kind of put in perspective for people who don't follow soccer, the UEFA Champions League, once you get past the group stage and before you get to the final, everything is two-leg, which means each team plays a home game. And the significance of it being that the away goal is the tiebreaker. So if you're the home team, you really don't want the away team to score, especially, you know, when it's the first leg. Conversely, if you are the visiting side, well, you really want to get that goal. That way, you know, if you're going home for the second leg, it gives you a significant advantage. Or if, you know, you happen to be down whenever you come home, you go on the road and you happen to get that away goal, and it could mean the difference between going through and going home. Boy, we've had some fun here in the U.S. today in our government, have we not?
Oh, man.
Today is the today Attorney General William Barr, he had testimony. He was in front of the Senate committee. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the Senate committee.
The Judiciary
Committee.
Well, yeah.
Okay. There's a few things that really kind of stuck out to me. Not many of them are what I would consider shining a positive light on the whole thing. But I'm curious as to your thoughts, and because I'm pretty sure it's over now, if I'm not mistaken, he's done. It's concluded. I don't think there's going to be a second day. Right, this was it, and this was done in the Senate, which is primarily Republican controlled. You know what? Just take it away. Tell us your thoughts. Tell us what you got out of it, and we'll start a conversation from there.
Sure. Yeah. First, let me confirm what you said is accurate. That this is, I believe, the only day that he's going to be testifying at this time. The only day he's scheduled to testify in front of the Senate. The Senate is obviously, as you said, Republican controlled. He is scheduled, I believe. Well, there is a scheduled hearing tomorrow in front of the House of Representatives, which obviously would be a little different because that's controlled by the Democrats. There is a scheduled hearing. The question is, will it take place? Because Barr has been alluding to the possibility that he won't show for that hearing. So just in line with that, I mean, the fact that he's telling the United States governmental entity that is a check on his power and the president's power that he's not going to show up unless they play by his rules. And I think one of the things that he wants them to do is not have a special counsel questioning him. There was an indication that they would bring in an outside counsel to question him, just much like did with Christine Blasey Ford. The Republicans brought in an outside counsel to question her. The Democrats were considering bringing in an outside counsel to question Barr tomorrow. You know, I don't know that it's necessary for the Democrats to do that. There's a lot of smart people, a lot of legally trained people that are able to ask those questions of Barr tomorrow. But it seems like it's a peeing contest, so to speak. You know, one side saying we're going to do this if we want to, the other side saying, well, if you do that, I'm not showing up. So before we get into that, let's talk about what happened today. So, you know, Barr goes up there and did he lie? Technically, I would say no. Did he absolutely go to the very edge and maybe beyond it with the color of his testimony? Absolutely. And what I mean by that is he continues to say that, you know, they found no collusion. They didn't find any collusion. And there was no significant, you know, indication that he, you know, cooperated with the Russians. And he continues to color his testimony that way. And the Republicans rah-rah and cheer that with Lindsey Graham and others, you know, backing what Barr is saying. But what's reality is that Mueller didn't say no collusion. He said that's not something that is defined within the federal crimes code. So we're not addressing that. However, was there cooperation with Russians by the Trump administration? Yeah, there was a lot of contact and cooperation between the two entities. Whether Trump directed that is the question that remains unanswered, because in Mueller's words, there were significant times where his finding out that, being able to piece that together, was impeded by Trump or his people, because they couldn't get the questions answered, the questions that would have led to finding either he did cooperate or instructed his people to cooperate with Russians or not, such that there would be a conspiracy. They couldn't get to that ultimate answer because they were obstructed, essentially. They were obstructed from doing so. So that's the question, and really the question that the government, that the wing of government that is represented by Congress needs to answer, because those questions were not answered in the format that was given. And what Barr is continuing to do is obfuscate or confuse the issue by continuing to turn to collusion, not conspiracy and obstruction. And, you know, he says there's no finding of obstruction. Again, there was not a specific worded count within the Mueller report saying there was definitive obstruction on the part of the president, again, because some things like his own people stopped him from obstructing justice, ultimately in the point where McGahn refused to execute the orders. But there's an indication that he attempted to obstruct justice. He wanted to obstruct justice. You know, he told Chris Christie, I want to fire Mueller. He asked McGahn to get rid of him. So the question is, do you get that into testimony in front of Congress, and is that enough to begin proceedings for impeachment? And we talked about this last week, investigation and impeachment. I don't think there has to be necessarily an and or, but I think you got to get the investigation started. So Barr has, you know, the spirit of his testimony, I'm going to say, is a lie. It's a farce. The spirit of his testimony has run afoul of what an attorney should be doing. An attorney takes an oath to represent to the tribunal the facts and the truth. He is not doing that. He is doing the opposite of that. He is trying to hide the truth. And that is a specific violation of the ethical rules of an attorney. When you take an oath in just about any jurisdiction, you are to be candid and with candor testify and reveal the truth to the tribunal. The tribunal here is the Senate today, and it's going to be the House of Representatives tomorrow. And he is not acting with candor.
Well, I might be a little naive in asking this, and I apologize if I am, but even whenever I was listening to it today and watching as much as I could, It seems like everybody in the in this thing, whether it was Barr or the senators or anybody else, kept saying this word collusion over and over and over again. And I believe there was only one senator who had kind of corrected everybody, sort of like off the cuff, that said, "Well, we all know collusion isn't a crime, but yet we still keep going back to the same word over and over and over again." And one of the problems I have with the Democrats is that they're not, I don't want to say they're not calling people on this, but they're not being very specific every single time that this word comes up, where they're not just like interrupting people and saying collusion's not a crime. Collusion can't be, the collusion's off the table, because that's not relevant. You can't charge somebody that is doing something that doesn't exist. You know,
Right. And
I kind of blame the Democrats for that, because they're just, to this day, they're still letting the Republicans control the narrative. And that really puts them at a disadvantage whenever they're trying to get to the truth. You know? That's the first thing I've noticed.
and part of it is the procedural problem, in that the procedure is controlled today by the Republicans. So the procedure of the hearings is going to be controlled. The gaveling, the cutting people off and letting them have their time, and the format is basically controlled by the Republicans. However, with that said, there are still opportunities to assert and continue to assert that the narrative is not about collusion, and it's a false narrative, and it's a smoke screen. You know, real quick, one of the things that I would always talk about, whether I was prosecuting a case as a prosecutor, or whether I was in a case, in a personal injury case or something like that, when you have to prove elements of a case, which when you're the prosecutor or you're representing the plaintiff in a case, in a civil case, it's your burden as the attorney and the plaintiff to meet the elements of a case. Meaning, like, let's just say as a assault or a battery on somebody, you have to prove that the person was physically harmed, that the other person had the intent to physically harm them, and that they sustained some injury as a result of that physical touching. You know, so you have certain elements that you have to meet, and if you can't prove those elements, then you can't win the case. So it's your burden, so to speak, and the burden may be a 51% burden, which, not in criminal case, but in a civil case, you might have to prove by a preponderance of the evidence, 51%. You just have to tip the balance ever so slightly in your favor with enough of the evidence to prove your case. Well, in order to do that, you have to put on facts. But what the defense side would often do in cases where we had a clear case, where we had a clear case that we could win, and they knew that we could win the case, what they would do is they would try to muddy the water. They would talk about everything, anything, to distract the jurors' attention from the facts that supported me meeting those elements of the case. And this is classic. This is what's going on right now by the Republican Party and those supporting Trump and those supporting Barr. They're muddying the water. They're throwing these stones in the river, in the stream, and dirtying up the base of the stream, saying collusion, 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 no collusion, no collusion, no collusion, no collusion. And the mud is rising from the bottom, and it's making the water less clear, and it's getting us distracted from the facts, which are that Trump wanted to fire Mueller. Trump had tried to want to get him removed. Trump cooperated with the Russians, asked the Russians to find Hillary's emails in plain sight. He asked for that. All those things happened in reality, and they're not allowing that to be talked about. And as you said, Master Patsy, the Democrats are doing a poor job of refocusing and kind of calming the waters and letting everybody see clearly through the water and letting the mud settle back to the ground and saying, okay, you keep talking about collusion, but we all know you're just wasting everybody's time. You're wasting the American public's time. You're wasting our time here in this hearing. Collusion's not a crime. Why do you keep talking about it? What we want to talk about is when the president did this and it's in the Mueller report. When the president did this and it's in the Mueller report. When the president did this and it's in the Mueller report. Why, Barr, don't you talk about that?
Yeah, it just seemed to me that, and this is where I say, you know, that the Democrats are really dropping the ball. I would guess the probably if it, the first thing one of them should have done was asked AG Barr, is collusion of crime? And as soon as he said no, the next question should have been, then why do you keep referring to it.
Right.
You know, and then he can't say it anymore. He's done. He cannot fall back on that. And none of them for 2 years now have done that. And I don't understand it. I cannot understand why no one said, just ask them flat out, is it a crime? No, then why do you keep referring to collusion for?
Right.
You know? I mean, call me goofy, and I understand, you know, I'm a martial artist. But it just seemed like if you're going to keep throwing this thing in my face, I'm going to ask you why you keep doing it. You know?
Right.
And the, and you got some smart people out there, and I don't get it. I don't understand why they just don't say, you know, let's quit playing this game. Is it a crime? Yes
right.
or no? No. Okay. Well then, why do you keep sitting there saying that is that he's not committing a crime? We're not asking you about that. We're not asking you to prove a negative. We know that's impossible. So let's just move on from this whole charade of trying to prove a negative. And let's start talking about the things that we know have happened. It just boggles my mind that they're not doing this. And this is why I say that they're dropping the ball.
Yeah, the Democrats in the Senate need to press harder and needed to press harder. That time seems to have passed for now. But they needed to press harder. And, you know, the positive that I would say out of all this is that as I look at the polling numbers and the reactions that people have, the American people are no longer buying this. They understand that collusion isn't a crime. It's been made clear to the American public. They understand that that's not the issue. They understand that they believe the American public overwhelmingly believes that Trump has done something wrong and that he's lying to the American public. So again, perception is reality, as you've always said. And now mm-hmm. we have a majority of Americans who are saying, even after all this narrative has been spun by Barr and his cronies and Trump and his cronies, the American public doesn't believe Trump, doesn't believe Barr, and believes that something was done that was wrong by Trump. So, you know, the momentum is definitely in favor of doing something to punish Trump for this and maybe punish Barr for this. Because, quite frankly, I think as an attorney, we as attorneys should really hold him accountable for violating the ethical rule. And maybe he should be disbarred or maybe he should be brought up on disbarment proceedings, because I would bet that he's a licensed attorney in District of Columbia. I would bet that he's a licensed attorney in some jurisdiction that has ethical rules that say you shall not lie or misrepresent to the tribunal. And that's exactly what he's done.
Well, let me ask you this, Frank, and I guess we're getting into how the sausage was made, okay? But I will tell you, whenever something like this, and understand what I mean, I'm not talking about this scale. I'm just talking about either a master or a school owner or what have you, behaves in a way that's not proper to whether you're in a federation or whatever the case may be. It is handled, and we kind of handle it ourselves, right? And people really don't see what happens. There's not a whole lot of light that is being shined or shown or how, you know, on the person or what they did or what the retribution is. It takes a little while, and eventually they just kind of go away, right? They're just kind of ostracized, and they're kind of outcast, and eventually they just kind of go away. Sometimes it happens very quickly. Sometimes it happens over a period of years, sometimes over a period of many years. But eventually it does happen. Is that kind of what would happen as an attorney? And number one, and number two, do you think that kind of happens, like whenever you're talking about something that's this big and this scale, and there's such a huge spotlight pressed on this thing? You know what I'm saying? Everybody's going to want a grandstand. I understand that, because everybody's looking to get reelected. Everybody's looking to make themselves look good, especially a few of the senators on here who are running for president. But how exactly does that work? Is there usually a whole lot of hype that's involved in if they were going to I don't want to say punish Barb, but maybe correct them, I guess is a better way of putting it. You understand what my question is?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. In the legal community, it's a big deal, and usually it's publicized enough for the public to know that it happened. If you know, it's not like put on the national news. It's not put on, you know, even necessarily local news unless a local news outlet decides to cover it. But usually the Bar Association will publish it in a large newspaper. They'll publish it in a trade journal, in a legal trade journal that some action was taken against an attorney for a violation of the rules. But look, let's even look nationally right now. What's going on with Avenatti, Michael Avenatti? There's a question of whether he's going to be disbarred because of misusing client funds. You know, he went after some big people, and I don't necessarily, you know, I'm not, let's not go too much in a tangent about Michael Avenatti, but you know, the question is, did he take on some big dogs to the point where they're now biting back at him? Probably. Was he grandstanding? Probably. Did he get himself into trouble with, you know, some of the legal judges, et cetera? Probably. But the fact of the matter is, now that it's a question of whether he's violated ethical rules, has it gone national? Yes, I've seen that on national outlets that Michael Avenatti is potentially facing jail time and potentially facing disbarment or an ethical comeuppance from the bar associations that he's a member of. So, would it happen with Barr? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that if there was some ethics inquiry into Barr, and if they brought him up in front of an ethics panel, in front of an ethics panel in any jurisdiction that he is a member of, absolutely, it would be made, you know, news of. And like I said, even if, you know, any attorney in a small town had some ethical inquiry and then some action taken against him or her, it's going to be published in the trade journal and probably in a local newspaper.
Yeah, well, in the Avenatti case, it appears to me that the reason there's so much attention on that is because he's bringing it on himself. You know,
True.
he's making all these public statements where the bar and the people that are investigating him, you're not really hearing from that side as much as you're hearing from him. But I understand, especially with Barr, right? If they take out the name, you know, Avenatti and put in the name Barr. Obviously, simply because he's the AG, there's going to be a lot of press, and there's going to be a lot of exposure. There's going to be a lot to that. And I understand that because of the size and scale of the person you're talking about. But I again, I don't think it would be the folks who are, I guess it would be the bar in this case. Excuse my ignorance, but I would assume it would be the bar in this case. They're not really gonna say or do a whole lot publicly, other than maybe say, look, we're investigating him, and that's it. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I mean, they may not even say that until the investigation were complete. They may keep that in house to the point where that what they do
Okay.
is, from my understanding, they send a letter to the attorney who's licensed and say, we're beginning an inquiry about your actions on such and such date or about your actions with regard to such and such. Please call us or contact our office. And that stays private at that point in time, usually. And then, you know, if some action is taken, then it's typically that's when it would be disclosed to the public.
Okay, so the bar, and generally speaking, doesn't even have to make it public. They just do so maybe as a courtesy to the community.
Right.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense to me. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get off on a tangent like this. I'm just
Great
trying to
question.
connect thoughts, you know.
It's a great question.
Do you think anybody? Well, first of all, I'm really kind of disappointed in the Republicans on through this whole day. I've said time and time again, the difference between Democrats and Republicans is Republicans fall in line and Democrats wait to fall in love, right? And I don't think that was more true about at least the Republican side as it was today. The Republicans really seemed to toe the line, right? And they weren't going to. It appeared to me that they had no intent of finding the truth. I mean, you look at Lindsey Graham's opening comments and opening statements. He's talking about Hillary Clinton, for God's sake. Are you kidding me? Really? This is about an investigation, a special, a Bob Mueller's thing that's investigating what happened during the presidential election, and in a large part investigating the president. And his opening remarks, he's talking about Hillary Clinton, who, if even though she didn't win the popular vote, she still lost the election. It just seemed to me that these guys were as partisan as you could possibly be. And I'm wondering what you got to do in order to get people to start doing things honestly, or as honest as politicians can get.
Well, this leads me to a thought that I was having, and it's a thought that I don't like to entertain, but follow me through with this if you just indulge me to go kind of through this line of thought. I think that the Republican Party, the hardcore Republican Party that supports Trump and really has bought into this belief, they've circled the wagons. They know that they're it even goes back to the election, okay? They saw the changing landscape in America. They saw that they were a dying breed. Okay, their last gasp, the last great white hope for them was Donald Trump, to tap into this idea that there's this disenfranchised core group of voters who are always going to vote. They're, the white evangelical, poor victims who we're going to blame everybody but the wealthy who control this country and keep these poor people poor. We'll blame everybody else and scapegoat everybody else. And get these people fired up to support Trump, and this will be our last gasp to control the country. So this whole mission, and it's been fed by the Russian internet trolls, it's been fed by the QAnon people, it's been fed by all this craziness that's going on, and these people who are, quite frankly, brainwashed to believe it. Okay, they are so fervent and so angry about everything and everybody, which, hence, let's talk about Hillary. Because we can get that base fired up again about how that's the root of all their problems. Hillary Clinton and her clan is the root of all her problems. Even though the Republicans have been in control of this country for 2+ years, have everything going their way. If anything's wrong, why aren't you blaming the people who are in control? Anyway, point being,
Good point. Good point, Frank.
they think that, meaning the Republican core, that even though the truth is outing against them, and even though the American public, by a vast majority now, is not believing their bullshit, quite frankly, they believe that the 25 to 30% who are hardcore zealots that will believe any crap that they feed them are going to do anything and everything, including up to violence, to keep them in power. And you go back to the election, and there was this talk, there was a woman who stood up and said, when Mike Pence was talking, if they steal the election from us, we're going to have a revolution. We're going to have an armed revolution. He said, no, let's not talk about that. Let's not talk about that. I don't know if you remember that, but he said, that's not going to happen. The elections aren't going to be stolen, blah, blah, blah. Let's not talk about that. And he was trying to quiet down this woman who was talking about that. And that's what they know will happen with these crazy zealots out there. I mean, there are people shooting up schools, shooting up churches, shooting up synagogues. There's a lot of armed white nationalists who will go and start violence if their king God gets taken down by the what they believe to be the deep state. And that's their narrative, that's their belief. And then what will happen is they'll roll out the tanks, and they'll have martial law, and they'll have control of the government through might or through force. And we'll have to see what happens as a result of that. And that's a big fear. That's why everybody talks about, we don't want a constitutional crisis. We don't want a constitutional crisis. We don't want a constitutional crisis. Let's just let this happen at the ballot box. Let's let this happen at the ballot box. Because they know that there's this storm brewing, that there's such a division in America. And look, the Russians think they're winning in this case. They think that they've got us so divided that this could happen in America. And I want to believe that it will be either not, it will not happen because the Nancy Pelosi and others who are playing the long game are going to put it in such a fashion that eventually the truth will be undeniable to a vast majority of people, or that the election will occur with Trump being so damaged by these investigations that he'll lose an election. And by such an overwhelming margin that nobody will want to go to the streets over it.
Yeah, you know, and to be honest, Frank, I mean, you and I have said it, I've talked to you about it. I always said from day one, he was never going to not finish his first term. Right?
Right.
So I also agree, and you know, you see my posts, you see my comments, you know, and you and I have even talked about it, where I've always said, grandma knows what she's doing. The one thing you don't want to do is piss off an Italian grandma, because she's going to get you. She's patient. She's firm. She knows what she's doing. Eventually, she's going to get you. And whenever she gets you, it's not going to be pleasant. Of course, she'll feed you after, but she's going to get you. Right? I still firmly believe that. And I still think that, as frustrating as it is, right? Because let's face it, it's not in our wheelhouse. This is not our world. It's closer to yours than it is to mine, without a doubt. But it's not how we do things. It's extremely frustrating to sit there and see these things and see the Democratic leadership basically telling you, grabbing you by the hand and tapping you on the hand and saying, don't worry about it. Just leave it alone. Just trust me. Just leave it alone. You know, everything's going to be all right. It's very hard to swallow. And, you know, we've been on this earth a half a century minimum, right? And every time, yep, grandma tells you that, she's right. But yet we still sit there and we still want to see this thing go forward, and we still want to see you know, impeachment proceedings, and we still want to do this, and we still want to do that. And I think, you know, maybe grandma's right. We can still have these impeachment proceedings. We just don't have to call it that. We can still put all these people out there and let them make these statements like Barr did today. And it really made me think, based on everything he said, especially the stuff that Kamala Harris really kind of set him up on and kind of forced him to say, that if you're playing the long game, this guy's in trouble. These folks are in trouble, because it might take 6 months, it might take a year, it might take whatever it is, but everything he said today is going to come back. And he's going to have a lot to answer for. And I don't think he has the right answers. You know, today was at least a muddy day at best. But eventually, I mean, let's face it, eventually we're going to get Robert Mueller in front of Congress. Eventually it's going to happen. I'd like for it to happen tomorrow, but eventually it's going to happen. And they're going to ask him, what about this? What about this? What about this? You know, your boss said this, your boss said that. Is that really what you said? Is that really what you meant? Is, you know, and so on and so forth down the line. And I think that is when you're going to see the proverbial shit hit the fan. I don't think, you know, right now things are still muddy. And I kind of agree with you know, the pundits and the news networks who are saying that the American people really don't have a stomach for this now. It's not really their big interest. But I think a lot of the reason they don't have that big interest, and it's not that big a deal to them, is because they don't see what's going on, right? They don't see it. They're just hearing it from the news networks. They're not actually seeing these people say these things. And I think once you actually get people seeing what these folks are saying and hearing it from them and seeing a video of them saying that in front of Congress, then I think that people's minds are going to change. I really do.
I agree with you. And there's a lot there to unpack what you just said. I think a lot of things that I want to start with in response to what you said is, I do think it's more in your wheelhouse than you gave yourself credit for. I think that, you know, the philosophies that you've studied, the life that you live, is very similar to, you know, I would say what you're preaching right now and what you're talking about, because the fact of the matter is we have to think about the long game more than we typically do as Americans. Maybe we were raised in this culture of We want things immediately. We want instantaneous justice and gratification. But you've trained yourself to think beyond that. You've trained yourself to think a little more long term, a lot more long term, I would say. And, you know, there's an Eastern philosophy, a Middle Eastern philosophy, an Italian philosophy, a European philosophy that I think, you know, through your training in martial arts, you've picked up the Eastern philosophy. Through you know, genetics and living your life with your home life, you had to pick up the Italian and the European philosophy. And look, in Europe, I'm struck by the fact that things are thought of much more long term. You look at architecture, you look at business. They don't look at a quick profit. They don't look at a quick building. They look at what's going to last. What is going to last for generation after generation, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years from now? Is this thing going to still be standing? Is our business still going to be here? Are we going to be taking care of the family members that come after us and the family members that come after them and after them, after them? And that's what's important, not what's today. So I think that as we evolve as a country, those things start to become more important to us. And the realistic thought that we don't have to have instant justice, but we do have to have justice and we have to do what's right. And when Italian grandma Nancy Pelosi says it's too divisive for the country to go through impeachment proceedings, I think she's thinking that way. She's thinking about the possible disruption to our country, to our civility, and what the lasting scar that would leave on a country, as opposed to, because there's always a reaction, right? There's the action and then there's the reaction. And it's not necessarily immediate reaction. It could be a swinging of the pendulum 20 years later that people say, we impeached this guy and it was just a matter of political will as opposed to what really should have happened. So the fact of the matter is I want justice, and maybe justice is impeachment, but at the same time, and we shouldn't be afraid to at least investigate it and think about it. But I think that the question is, let it take its time, not rush to do that. And I would say one last kind of thing that I would want to button up on this is, this is a thing that I want America and Americans to realize. Patsy, Master Patsy, do you have the first dollar or the first $10 or the first $100 that you earned in your life somewhere stored away?
You know, I wish I did, but no, I don't. I blame my wife for that. But in any case.
I sure don't. And I'm not nostalgic. Look, I had a business for 12 years, my own business, and it was a great business, and I loved running it, and I love the people that I was able to serve, but I'm not nostalgic to the point where I kept the first dollar bill on the wall or anything like that, because what is money meant to do? It's meant to be spent
It's meant to be circulated, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
It's meant to be circulated, and if you could save some of it for a rainy day, great. If you could save some of it for retirement, awesome. But the fact of the matter is, even as it sits in a bank and accumulates some additional interest, someday you're going to take it out and spend it. Someday, when you retire, you're going to live off it. And the idea is to spend it down and recirculate it. Yeah. So that is transient. That is not forever. That is not long lasting. Money and the economy can't be the primary factor in terms of what is important to us as human beings. If you ran out of air and oxygen that was clean to breathe, you're dying. And money don't mean a damn thing. If you ran out of water that was clean and easy to drink and good for you, and it killed you instead, money don't mean a damn thing. If you ran out of food that nourished your body and was good for building your muscles and your brain, money doesn't mean a damn thing. Okay, let's face the facts, people. If you don't have a business that's sustainable for generation after generation, the money's not going to keep coming in. If you don't have buildings that keep standing up to the gale force winds and the hurricanes and the tornadoes and the crazy weather patterns that we have these days, you're not going to be able to keep earning money. So we have to think about the long term, and we need to think about that more seriously as opposed to the quick buck. And what I want to say to people is, deregulation of environmental things, of food products, deregulation, it might make business boom for a year, for 2 years, for 3 years, but in the long term, it's not good. It's not good for us. No. It's not good for us as people. It's not good for us as a nation. It's not good for us as a world. And we got to start thinking longer term. people get disgusted and angry by regulation because they're like, I have to jump through this hoop and I have to jump through that hoop. And believe me, as a business owner, I didn't like it, but you just do it. You play by the rules of the game and you still make money and you still do well. And it's just a matter of understanding how to play the game. It's not a matter of being a burden. It's just understand the rules. You play soccer, you play baseball, there's rules. You play by the rules, and if you play well, you're rewarded for it. So
right.
Forget about the short-term boost in the economy. Think about what's the long-term effect and what's that going to do to your kids, your grandkids, their kids, to our world. And it's something I want people to really take seriously.
Yeah, it seems to me that you have a whole bunch of people who are spouting these things and seem to put themselves in a position of authority that are really looking at short term and really, really short sighted goals when, you know, we're all mortal. We're all going to die. I would tell everybody I'm immortal until proven otherwise. Right. And I kind of do that as a joke, but the fact of the matter is we're dying, right? You know, you look at us, especially folks our age, right? And we've climbed the mountain and we've gotten to the top of the peak and now we're coming down the other side. And so the view is definitely different. And you sit there and you say, you know, what am I leaving behind for my kids? What am I going to leave behind for you know, grandkids that I don't even have yet? You know, what's going to happen to them? Because my life's done. Okay. I mean, I don't want to say it's done like I'm dying tomorrow. That's not what I mean. You know, but what I mean is my glory days are gone. Now I kind of shoulder the responsibility and the burden of making sure that I have a world. I'm leaving a world behind that my son can strive and can achieve and can do great things. And I don't mean great like, you know, Lionel Messi great. I mean great just like he was a great father. He was a great role model to people. He was upstanding in the community. Nobody ever really had a bad thing to say about him. That's what I mean by greatness. That's greatness. But what happens? What happens whenever, you know, he doesn't have that opportunity, and he doesn't have that opportunity because of the choices myself, you know, I've made. That's a big disservice I did to my family and to my son and to my family name and to my community and to my country and to my world. And the fact that these people don't see that, they're only interested in the dollars and only interested in the financial gain. It's be honest, it's sickening. It really is. It's sickening to see that.
It is. And I think people forget that the short-term nature of money and they forget that it's really fleeting. And I think that's a moment that has to be preached to people over and over so that they understand. Because look, and I understand if somebody's poor, $10, $100, $1,000 means a whole heck of a lot to them. And I understand that.
Yeah.
People need money to be able to feed themselves, feed their family. And I'm not discounting that. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is to be able to do it the right way. And you know, I'm angry with the guilt. I'm angry with the super wealthy who did it by means that were illegal and immoral. And, you know, they shouldn't be able to benefit forever from that, you know, and that's a whole nother story we can get into. But the bottom line is I'm not discompassionate to people that need money and understand that a good economy sometimes provides them that opportunity, but it can be done without sacrificing our morals and without sacrificing our well-being and our long-term future well-being. And I think we're on the same page with that, but it just needs to be preached to people and they need to understand that money is fleeting and that it's not permanent.
Yeah, and that's exactly right, because you know, these people, and this is going to sound mean friggin', and I don't mean it to, but you're looking, you know, you're talking about you kind of touched on the poor people or the people who are living paycheck to paycheck, the people who basically need every dollar, right? These aren't the people who are dictating policy, and they're not the people who are dictating how the economy is headed, or where it's headed, I should say. they're not the ones that are dictating, where the job opportunities are going to be. They are the people who are reacting to it. And it's not really incumbent upon them, to these folks, to be the people who are determining our course of action, right? Because they can't do it. They don't have it within their means to do it. And again, that's not a knock, and I'm not degrading, and I'm not criticizing that. That's just, they're not that upper one half of 1%. You and I aren't either. We are products of our economy and of our environment, right? And we're not exactly, we're not exactly struggling, to say the least. So we're looking at those folks that take the money we make and throw it away on a freaking yacht or some, some shit like that, just throw away money for that. These are the folks that have to sit there and say, look, there's a better way to do this. I look at a lot of the wind power, the solar power, these things that we should be leading on. Because eventually it's going to happen. They're eventually, coal's going to die out. Okay? And we have to come up with an alternative fuel source. Why is it so important to some of these people to have to catch up and to let somebody else take the lead? Whenever you could take the lead and you can dictate where it's going to be, and you can make a shit ton of money. If you're the guys that are out in front, if you're the Elon Musks of the world, right? Because that's where it's headed. Why not be the guy that dictates instead of the guy that's trying to play catch up all the time? It doesn't make any sense to me.
And it should be one of those things that if the American ideal is to be a pioneer and to be self-sufficient, solar and other energy sources like that are it fits into the narrative and it fits into the wheelhouse. And the fact of the matter is, I've investigated it, and you basically are able to sell your credits. And the stupid false narrative that some of these idiotic politicians that are against, quote unquote, against solar, against wind. They sell this idea that the sun sets and the wind dies. That's so stupid because, number one, it doesn't matter. What matters is the sun doesn't set for 8, 10, 12 hours a day. And that's when you
Right.
accumulate energy, you sell it to the energy company, and then they sell you the credits back whenever the sun is down. And that's how it
Right.
works. So you use less of the fossil fuels because you're using the energy that you acquire from the sun to help heat other people's homes. And then you get the money, the energy back at nighttime when you need it. And it's a symbiotic relationship and it works perfectly. And the thing is, you can cut your heating bills and your electric bills by 60, 70, 80% here in northwestern Pennsylvania, which has some of the worst sunlight in the world. We can cut our energy costs by about 70% a month just by installing solar on not even on the ground, just on your rooftop, which is crazy to me. You could save 70% of your energy bills just by doing that. And there's tax credits for doing it. So be self-sufficient, be a pioneer, be an American, idealist. I mean, that's what we're built on, right? So
Great.
embrace all the great things that we are, that we are great Americans, and we can be great by doing these kind of things. It's not stupid. It's not liberal. It's smart. It's smart
It's
economically.
smart.
It's smart. It's smart for our country, for our world. And, just embrace it.
And everybody wins.
Yep.
Everybody wins. The companies win, the homeowner wins. The small farming community, when everybody wins. There's no downside to this. Why is it so hard to do? And I know I'm just asking this, theoretically. Why is it so hard to do? Everybody wins. There's no downside to it. What's the problem? Why are people so resistant to it? Why are people so like, no, I'm not going to do that. That's crazy. I'm just going to keep using coal because I've always used coal. I'm always going to, use generators because we've always used. Why? Why? There's no downside to it, and no one's going to get cancer from the windmill, regardless of what your
Right.
president says, right? I don't
Absolutely.
see this. I don't understand how this is a bad thing.
It's absolutely not. And people just need to understand that We're not, we don't need to be shills for the energy companies. We don't need to be shills for the big gasoline and energy and oil and coal companies. They've got enough lobbyists. They've got enough money to go run and tell Congress what they want. They've got enough to advertise the way they want to. We don't need to fight their battles for them. We need to protect our own selves and make sure that we're taking care of our children, our grandchildren, and our world. And that's something that is important. So anyway, I just wanted to give a quick update. You talked about the greatness of Lionel Messi. He scored two goals since we've been on this podcast. One was a deflection rebound, which was awesome. He came in following the shot. And the other one was a free kick from about 18, 20 yards out. And he put it over the wall and passed goalkeeper Alisson. So we're now in the 90th minute, and Barcelona was able to keep Liverpool off the scoreboard. One time, very luckily, Mo Salah had a very easy chip shot, and he hit the post, and it bounced back out. So they were so far able to keep Liverpool out of the net.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like I always said, I really think that, and I admit I'm a Barcelona fan. Everybody knows that, but holy shit! I mean, Messi's unbelievable. He's absolutely unfreaking believable. He is, to me, he's the GOAT. Right? He's the greatest of all time. But I'm biased, and I know I'm biased, and I'm going to continue to be biased because I'm a Barcelona supporter, and that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. But
I like Messi better than Ronaldo. Personally, I just like him better.
I will say that they're a minute and a half into 5 minutes of extended time. Barca's up 3-0. They're going to cruise from here, I think. They might actually squeeze another goal out. What a great side.
Possible.
Yeah. And, for everybody who watches the Premier League, this is kind of making you feel pretty good, because I don't know too many people who follow the English Premier League who want to see Liverpool win anything. So there you go. We're glad we could help. Trust me when I tell you, as a Barcelona fan, I'm really happy right now.
Yeah, I like the idea of going to Liverpool next week with a 3-0, maybe a 4, hopefully a 4-0, but at least a 3-0 advantage going into the second leg.
Yeah, that kind of helps a lot. And you kind of figure, you're not gonna shut Barcelona out. You're just not going to do it. There's just too much there. And so Liverpool's gonna have to put 5 goals up, probably, because Barcelona's gonna be good for 1, and that's gonna be an away goal. And as we stated at the beginning of our pod today, that away goal is the tiebreaker. That means everything. So. Yeah, I'm really liking Barca's chances of getting into the finals right now. I really am. So I'll be honest with as much as we complained for the last hour, I'll be honest, I'm kind of happy. That being said, Frank, I think maybe we should wrap this up. As always, an absolute fantastic podcast with you. I really enjoy this hour we spend together, or close to this hour, whatever it is. So I want to thank everybody for listening, and like you and I always say, people's time is very valuable, and the fact that they're willing to spend their time with at least an hour of their week with us really means a great deal to us. It truly does, folks. You have no idea how much we talk about and how much it means to us. Parting words before we call it a pod, Frank?
Just echoing what you said. Thanks, everybody. I hope we provide some thought provoking things for you. You don't always have to agree with us, obviously. That's what makes the world go around. But I just want people to think and think through all these issues for themselves and not be, brainwashed by either side. And I believe in the American people. I believe in all the American people, regardless of their party affiliation. I think that the common man and woman in this country is going to provide the healing and is going to provide the solutions and the answers. And I just hope that we were able to see that. That's what I want to see in our lifetime, is that common sense prevails. So thank you all for listening. And I just root for everybody that's out there.
And as always, folks, thank you. And I'm kind of cutting this a little short, and I'm being real quick about it, but thank you, goodbye, and God bless. We'll talk to you guys again next week.
Thanks for listening to Lessons from the Dojang with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show and want to know more, check out dojanglelessons.com and please leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Join us again next week when we discuss whatever the hell's been going on.
Butchered Sports, raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.